pocket and underneath.
And it'll go surreal.
You've been talking about Sasquatches and Yetis.
Yellow, orange object straight ahead.
This is the Paranormal Report.
Welcome to the Paranormal Report. I am Jim Harold, and he is...
Micah Hanks, at least I think. I guess, what is it, time out of mind or whatever? I'm in Texas. That's what I'm trying to say.
Everything is big in Texas, including Micah's brain.
Don't go there, my friend.
Your brain? Where is your mind anyway, Micah?
I don't know. I think my mind's just out the window today. You know, this week has just been... a blur. There's been so much going on. Did I tell you this, Jim? We actually went to Lake Worth, where, you know, the sighting of in 1969, the famous Lake Worth monster, Lyle Blackburn, took us there.
Yeah, Lyle Blackburn. I've had him on the show. That's very cool. I did not know that. No, that's neat.
We got to hang out with Lyle. I actually I left my coat in the back of his truck, so I've got to go by and see him again on Friday before I leave. But Lyle has this incredible, I mean, one of the most impressive collections of memorabilia and also, you know, certain amounts, I guess, of what one might call evidence supporting the existence of the so-called Beast of Boggy Creek or the Falk Monster.
Hmm.
But most of what he has in his collection are, for instance, he has the original poster that was used for the promotion of the film that the artist, and his name slipped from my mind, but this is the same artist who did, for instance, the Star Wars movie posters.
Wow.
It's an original, and he tracked it down, and he has the thing, an actual painting hanging above his television. He's got all kinds of stuff. It's just really, really a wonderful collection of things. He got the mask that was used for the creature in the second Return to Boggy Creek film, and he was just so gracious. Literally, I'd just gotten off the plane, and Kyle Filson of Expanded Perspectives picks me up. We drive 10 minutes over from the airport. We visit Lyle and his wonderful wife, Sandy, and their little daughter, Lila. Who has all kinds of dinosaurs, one named Nessie. She's a budding cryptozoologist. It was just wonderful. So it's been a great time down here.
Well, very, very cool. Now, you were talking about entertainment. Our first story is about entertainment. But first, I know that you had some interesting listener feedback. This really kind of caught my ear when you told me about it. Pretty neat stuff, actually, coming from somebody in a position to be in the know.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't say too much. I don't want to go all X-Files on anybody, but then again, I get ahead of myself. I do have a friend who has a background in aerospace and engineering, and George writes saying that regarding TPR 130, and these are just some general thoughts, but I always like to you know, incorporate that if somebody gives some well-reasoned ideas. He says, you know, I thought it was odd that they said that these birds dropped out of the sky due to disease. Folks, you'll remember this story from last week. Mm-hmm. He says it seems unlikely that they would all be able to time it just right to die at the same time and just drop from the sky. More likely, they would land and die over a period of time. No one observed them dropping, as with a true Fortean skyfall. And he says watching fish fall must be a real pleasure. then he changes gears and says, you know, regarding Brandenburg, of course, the gentleman claims that there was this ancient cataclysm on Mars, right?
Yeah, a nuclear explosion. He thinks that somebody nuked him.
Yeah. Well, you know, now my friend George describes Brandenburg as a real character. He says, I've heard him interviewed on a number of podcasts, and recently he's been more actively claiming the ancient alien attack on Mars. He's even basing this on apparently the XE-129, which one of his unnamed defense contacts had said was an emission from nuclear weapons. My friend says he needs to back up his apocryphal claim that it is used to detect explosions. And to think one could anticipate what kinds of weapons a million-year-old alien race would be using, such as, for instance, he claims an Empire State Building sized nuclear weapon. And my friend thinks that seems pretty odd just as well. And I got to say, I agree. Where does that information come from? You know, I mean,
well, the thing that got me, and I think I even said it at the time that we were talking about this, is this whole claim that there was the Utopians and the Octavians or something like that were the races that inhabited Mars. I mean, how do you know that? How do you know that they were their names? Although his background's very, very enticing and interesting, it did leave me, as I know it did with you, with more than a little bit of skepticism.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. But, you know, there's one famous skeptic and one famous believer in the realm of fiction.
Aha, yes.
Maybe making a comeback soon. What you got, Jim?
Yeah, this has been all over the net. I think people are very excited. X-Files is coming back. It's going to be back on Fox after 13 years off of the air. Now it's officially returning, although you may be a little disappointed. It's only going to be a 6-episode limited series. Well, who knows? Maybe if they're successful with that, maybe there's more to come. And we're going to see the return of three important people in that original series: Chris Carter, the creator of the series, David Duchovny, and Gillian Anderson. And Carter said, "I think of it as a 13-year commercial break. The good news is the world has only gotten that much stranger, a perfect time to tell these six stories." So very, very cool stuff. Now, they're going to start production this summer. There's no premiere date and no word if other cast members from the original series will return. That's from EW.com, Entertainment Weekly. But I've got a funny postscript to this, or kind of a strange postscript to this.
Okay.
Last month, for my email newsletter, I gave away a box set of In Search Of. Now, this was set up early in March before the unfortunate passing of Leonard Nimoy. And if you sign up to my free newsletter, by the way, over at jimherald.com, you would have qualified for that drawing. So we drew it and gave it away and shipped it out last week, actually, to the winner. And we selected In Search Of just because I love In Search Of. And then, unfortunately, Leonard Nimoy passed. This month, I thought, well, I'll do something totally different. I'll give away a couple seasons of X-Files. And lo and behold, I did that, and now they're returning. So you can still get in on that, by the way. If you go over to jimherald.com and sign up for my free newsletter, you'll be automatically entered into that drawing, unfortunately, only for people in the continental United States just because of the limits of shipping and so forth. But and if you're signed up, you're already entered. But the funny thing was, there was this X-Files announcement, and now, you know, it coordinates with my giveaway. So I'm trying to think what I should give away next, Micah, because I'm sure whatever it is, there'll be big news following.
You know, folks, head on over there and sign up for Jim's email newsletter, and you too will be privy to Jim's next psychic predictions. Yeah, right. Now, I got to tell you about X-Files, bud. You know, funny thing, I'm not someone who dislikes X-Files, but I've never really watched the show. Can you believe that? Everybody's like, you must, you know. As a matter of fact, I guess, you know, there may be critics out there that are like, oh, you know, Micah Hanks, just, he's the kind of guy who grew up watching too much X-Files. No, actually, I never was very compelled to watch the show, despite my incredible interest in all of this sort of subject matter, what we might call in the broader sense the unexplained or Fortiana. I've never been somebody who, I remember trying to watch the movies, you know, I couldn't really get into them. I watched a couple of episodes of the series, just, you know.
I bet I know why, and I think it's similar for me. I've watched it from time to time, but I was not a devotee of it. I think it's because we're interested in what we perceive as true accounts and not necessarily fictional accounts. Is that it?
You know, I think that really is it, because when I see a television show that's just kind of taking liberties with the folklore surrounding, you know, evidence of the unexplained. You know, not to say that when I mention taking liberties, that's a bad thing. It's just that, you know, it's based on.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
but, you know, I can watch a TV show that's based on it, or I can go and read a book, you know, and I find that, you know, the actual pursuit of knowledge in relation to these fields of inquiry is much more stimulating to me intellectually. But I'll tell you this, too. While that show didn't quite ever do it for me, I think the more esoteric and strange Twin Peaks is an all-time favorite of mine.
Oh, mine too.
I love, and now I'm hearing, just, you know, because this kind of ties in, you know, since X-Files is confirmed is coming back, now there's some question about whether or not the Twin Peaks reboot is actually going to happen. It had been widely publicized, and you know, again, the source information that I had, there was an article we linked in the Greylian Daily News the other day that was actually talking about how David Lynch is now having doubts about it.
Yeah, and he's not gotten involved with it and those kind of things. Yeah, that's kind of, I think that was going to be, was that a Netflix project, if I remember correctly?
I think it was Showtime, as I understood.
Yeah, you're right.
And it was a similar situation where there were going to be a limited number of episodes, and, you know, of course, Kyle MacLachlan was going to return as Agent Cooper. But I think that there were a few other cast members who were going to be making return appearances. Now they're saying it may or may not happen. That's really unfortunate, because I'm happy to hear that X-Files is coming back. I was even more happy about Twin Peaks, and now that that's been cast into doubt, well, I guess, you know, we're still stuck in the White Lodge, aren't we?
Absolutely. Like, I've got a damn fine cup of coffee here and ready to get on to the next story. Now, I just see the headline here, Mike. I haven't had the chance to delve into this. I know some people don't like Newt Gingrich, but giant killer Newt discovered? What's this?
You are psychic, because I was going to say, I said, now, folks, this is not, of course, our former, what was he?
He was Speaker of the House. Yeah. And perennial failed presidential candidate. Yes, at this point, Newt, regardless of your political beliefs, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen. Yes. this is not that Newt. This is a killer Newt the size of a car. And I love how the headline reads, found in Portugal, but it's not alive. Of course, this is a newt that was the size of a car, a big league predator during the rise of the dinosaurs. Now, it was reported by the Metro in the UK that hundreds of these gigantic toothy creatures infested a lake in Portugal, attacking any dinosaur unlucky enough to stray too near. And after seeing this guy and knowing that he existed, we may never look at newts the same way again. It was described as a ferocious amphibian and, of course, a distant relative to the salamanders that exist today. But I got to tell you that what's interesting is that this was found in Peru. But I find that, or I'm sorry, not Peru, but Portugal. But there are reports from different parts of the world of creatures kind of like this, these giant, amphibious, monstrous kinds of things. In fact, I think that our friend Patrick Weege over at Anomalous Books has republished a book called "In Search of Lake Monsters," and that had been a book that. The author Peter Costello, I think it was the only book of that sort of subject that he wrote, and he wrote a lot of other things about history and politics and whatnot, but Costello's book is now back in print. One of the definitive works on lake monsters, and it almost makes you wonder, a creature like this, yet again, kind of like the question over Bigfoot. We know that there were creatures that are essentially what people describe when they see Bigfoot that have existed in the fossil record, and then we have, occasional reports of strange things that pop up in a lake or, of course, sea serpents and things like that that seem like they literally strolled out of the Stone Age or something before that. And, I can't help but look at these kinds of cases and wonder sometimes if there aren't indeed animal species that have held over at times, much like the coelacanth and the like. But either way, I'm kind of hoping this giant killer newt doesn't still exist, because he doesn't look like the kind of guy I'd want to meet by myself in the dark alley.
No, I fully agree with that.
I'll stick with Newt Gingrich. Yeah,
there you go. Well, this next story is really maybe my favorite of the week, at least of the stories I was able to cobble together, because it involves reincarnation, which fascinates me. It involves Dr. Jim B. Tucker from the University of Virginia. We've talked about his work on reincarnation and his predecessor, Ian Stevenson, of course. And this is really an extremely neat story. In fact, I recommend people, when we post it, Mike actually puts together the show notes and does a fantastic job, and there will be a link to this story. I recommend you go and read the story and actually watch the video package. This is from NBC's Today Show. And you see some skeptics on the set going, wow, this is something else. Well, anyway, it's the story of a little boy. His name is Ryan. He's 10 years old, and he claims that he is the reincarnation of a Hollywood actor / agent. And the interesting thing was that the little boy finds this picture from Hollywood after his mom checks him out from the library, goes through it, and finds this obscure extras actor and says, that's me. Then he proceeds to name 55 specific things about this man. They get in touch with Tucker, and Tucker is able to confirm all 55. And these are things that they found not on the internet, but had to research and go through documents and talk to family members of this long dead man. And all of them were confirmed. And the guy's name was Marty Martin. He was a former movie extra who later became a powerful Hollywood agent and died in 1964. In fact, he was in Mae West's first picture. Now, there's a few really cool ones. Ryan claimed that he lived on a street with the word rock in it. Turned out, after some research, Martin lived at 825 North Roxbury Drive in Beverly Hills. The boy craved a specific type of orange soda that hasn't been made in several decades. Now, here is the best thing. They were working with Tucker on this, and there was one mistake that the boy made. in recounting this man's life. And it really bugged Tucker. Specifically, the little boy said he didn't see why God would let you get to be 61 and then make you come back as a baby. Well, this really bothered Tucker because according to the death certificate, Martin, the man who he was supposedly the reincarnation of, was 59 when he died.
Uh-huh.
Tucker went back further and found out that the death certificate was wrong.
Really?
And that Martin was not 59, as the death certificate said. He was actually 61 when he died.
What? if this is well documented, as Dr. Tucker claims, I mean, you know, again, I can see that idea comes to mind, where it was, as we've talked about a bit in the past, even Dr. Carl Sagan, you know, had, doctor, you don't hear him referred to as that, but anyway, yeah, Carl Sagan had said while they may still be dubious, and I think his wording was something akin to the fact that, and they probably are, some of these cases of reincarnation may beg further inquiry, and this sounds like maybe one of them, if what Dr. Tucker is saying is indeed accurate. I mean, that's incredible. If
there was another thing where I can't recall, something like he said he'd been married X times and everything, the guy's sister or daughter thought he'd only been married a certain time, but it turned out to be that he was married the times that Ryan said. I mean, it's just amazing. It's a really, you know, of the mainstream stories I've seen, this one from the Today Show, and this is back on March 16th, just caught it in the last couple of days, is really one of the best. It was Cynthia McFadden, who for years was with ABC's Nightline, so a pretty serious journalist. And they were joking at the end, you know, as they do, Mount Lauer was there, Al Roker, but kind of everybody was going, wow, that is interesting. That was kind of the feeling you got. So I really love this story, and I highly recommend that you check it out. Just go to jimherold.com or the graylingreport.com or graylingreport.com. Click on the show notes. The links will be there. But I really recommend, if you're interested in subject matter, you owe it to yourself to check out the text of this story and also the full video package.
Hold on, Jim. One real quick, I just want to acknowledge something that's happening right now. A while back, we did a show where we featured that story about the mysterious voice from within a car where a child had been imprisoned when it flipped over. And, of course, the mother was dead, but they even had that press conference all talking about, you know, where was the voice coming from. And I remember we talked about that on the Graylin Report also, and my co-host Chris Hayes and I had this kind of moment of silence where we just kind of went, what do you say after that? And I almost feel the same way in relation to this story. If indeed all of those facts come together the way that they appear to, you know, and folks at home know I you know, always take a skeptical approach because I think it's necessary, not because I want to disbelieve.
to believe. Ha ha. Where'd you hear that before? No.
I think we all want to believe. I frankly think that there are some skeptics who also want to disbelieve because it's kind of a cult of personality that they get into. But, you know, I look at this and I can't help but think that this is maybe something that, I mean, if all the facts can be verified in the way that Dr. Tucker says, this is almost one of those wow moments, you know, where we do need to, or maybe at very least it would be warranted to consider further serious scientific inquiry, you know, or maybe study of psychology. The way, you know, I think a scientific methodology applied to the study of reincarnation claims, because that is really fascinating.
That it is. And another thing that's fascinating, I think, a lot of times you hear people speculate about it. I know that I'm sure you've talked about on your program. I know that we've had guests like the late Jerry Smith about this particular subject, but the government must be taking it seriously because they took some time recently to debunk it. And that is the subject of chemtrails. What do you got for us, Micah?
Well, you know, I think that there's first that breakdown that should be given. You know, I remember my grandfather telling me years ago that he had photographed chemtrails. And he even said, you know, I took such good photos. He says, if I could ever find them, you ought to send them to George Norrie at Coast to Coast AM. My granddad, 100 years old and still a listener of Coast to Coast AM. And he would probably listen to all these podcasts. You know, if he had eyesight that was good enough that he could probably navigate a computer, he still reads. But macular degeneration has prevented him from being able to, you know, to surf the web and do things like that. So he has to read with a mechanical eye. He always talked about chemtrails. And so we had a conversation about it a while back, and I said, what do you mean by these chemtrails? And he said, well, you know, what I mean is when a plane is flying and it's utilizing, you know, a particular kind of exhaust for skywriting, you know, those chemtrails that are used, you know, for the purpose of remaining in the sky for a longer period so that the skywriter can produce, you know, for instance, in this case, what he photographed was a skywriter who was drawing a tic-tac-toe over Asheville in the sky. You don't see it a lot these days, but, you know, skywriting used to be a pretty interesting way of advertising and whatnot. And so that's what he meant when he said chemtrails. But there's this conspiracy that's been going on for years, and Alex Jones and others have talked about this, you know, including the guest you mentioned there, the idea that the government may be involved in some sort of propagation of chemicals into the atmosphere that are intended to harm or to control or to do something to the general populace. And my friend Cam and Kyle of Expanded Perspectives, when we were discussing this recently, argued, well, you know, you'd think that if they were going to try and poison people, that they would find a way that wouldn't contaminate the entire air supply, including the air supply breathed by those who are perpetrating the conspiracy. You know, something like this, you can see that there's a rather illogical attitude about all this. And so this is what has prompted the EPA to actually put together what they call the Aircraft Contrails Fact Sheet on their website. And I want to share a little portion with you here. This is what was carried in the Christian Science Monitor, actually reported on it. Contrails, according to the EPA website, are line-shaped clouds or condensation trails composed of ice particles that are visible and behind jet aircraft engines, typically at cruise altitudes in the upper atmosphere. Contrails have been a normal effect of jet aviation since its earliest days, and depending on the temperature and the amount of moisture in the air at the aircraft altitude, contrails evaporate quickly if, that is, the humidity is low, or they may persist and grow if the humidity is high. Now, jet engine exhaust provides only a small portion of the water that forms ice and persistent contrails. Persistent contrails are mainly composed of water naturally present along the aircraft flight path. And then they further state, the EPA is not aware of any deliberate actions to release chemical or biological agents into the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So that's the statement. And, of course, apparently there are a lot of people who are looking at this and thinking this just furthers the conspiracy because now,
that they've answered it, it means that they're really concerned that it's getting out.
Yeah, exactly. But I got to be honest with you. You know, I've never really bought the whole chemtrail thing. And I got to say, we'll have this linked up in the show notes, the CSM's article on this. And it's really pretty interesting. They go a little further down the rabbit hole and talk about, you know, proponents of the idea, and then also some people who are not advocates and who argue against it, and they kind of present all the perspectives in relation to all this, including linking to the famous website AboveTopSecret.com. So, you know, again, I don't buy the chemtrail thing. Now the EPA's weighed in, and for some, that only is the headline at the CSM reads, EPA debunks chemtrails further fueling conspiracy theories. And they include a little video there that talks about it just as well. So, you know, again, I've never really bought the chemtrail thing or what I perceive as being a fairly illogical argument supporting it anyway, but now the EPA is trying to argue against it just as well.
Well, since we're on that kind of conspiratorial mindset, and I'm kind of with you that I'm a little bit skeptical of that particular conspiracy theory. Always glad to hear the theories, but a little bit skeptical about, but a little less skeptical about this conspiracy theory, because we know that some of this happened. After World War II, we know that Nazis headed down to South America and many times lived in the wide open for many, many years. Very distressing. And we had a great guest on my Conspiracy Corner show about this, Peter Lavenda, and he wrote a book called Ratline, which talked about his belief that Hitler not only fled to South America, but lived quite comfortably for many years after he was perceived to be dead at the end there of the European facet of the Second World War. Well, just recently, ruins have been found in remote Argentinian jungle, and they may be a secret Nazi hideout. Archaeologists, and this is according to TheGuardian.com, so a reputable newspaper, archaeologists believe ruins found in a remote jungle region may be the remains of a hideout built by Nazis to flee in the event of the defeat in the Second World War. They are looking at three buildings located in northern Argentina near Paraguay, the Clarín newspaper reported. They found five German coins minted between 1938 and 1941 in a fragment of porcelain plate bearing the inscription "Made in Germany." And they're saying that these may have been built, but they were never needed because, as I said earlier, thousands of Nazis and Croatian and Italian fascists lived in Argentina with the blessing of President Juan Perón. Don't cry for me, Argentina. His wife, Eva, who led the nation from 1946 to 1955 and again briefly in the 1970s. For example, Eichmann, a key organizer of the Holocaust, was captured in 1960 by an Israeli commando team and taken for trial. And other senior Nazis who sought refuge in Argentina were Mengele, Schwamberger, Rashman, von Oven, and Kutschmann. So it was a place for Nazis to flee after the Second World War and kind of escape justice. But interesting that they found this, and they think it may have been planned as a hideout. But really, it's kind of an excuse for me to discuss the Hitler survived Second World War, because I think it's very inconclusive. There's a lot of shadiness that went on. The idea that he went to his bunker and committed suicide really was not proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. So I do wonder if somebody like Peter Lavenda is correct and Hitler did survive the Second World War and lived out his years in relative peace.
Oh, absolutely. I've always wondered about that. As a matter of fact, I'm just interested here. I want to, as we're talking about this, I wondered if, according to the Wikipedia page, it actually addresses that. I'm not seeing directly. I'm sure at some point on this page it probably talks about it. I'll look into it a little later. But I mean, you know, or in a general sense, I know that the supposed discovery of the burned bodies of Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun by the Russians there literally as they were closing in on Berlin has always been a matter of dispute, and for some, I think it was like 20 years, there was no official record that what was said was found in relation to the ultimate fate of the Führer was indeed true and factual. And of course, you know, I've probably discussed with you before on some of the programs that there was a History Channel documentary a few years ago, which had decided to try and gain access to a fragment of a skull that was held in Russia, believed to actually have belonged to Hitler. And the genetic tests that were conducted and featured in this program concluded that it was actually a fragment of a skull that had belonged to a woman, and that this was not indeed Hitler's actual remains. In which case, apparently what we're to take from this is that there are no known remains of Adolf Hitler that have been conclusively proven to actually exist. But there are some very compelling, some people might, you know, lump this in with the conspiracy theories, but as you named that list of characters, maybe Josef Mengele among the more infamous who escaped to parts of South America. We know that there were many who actually did, and that there were many operations that were carried out, particularly kind of looking at Argentina as a epicenter of this. But these stories, and the testimony of many people who said that they knew a man who not only fit the description of Hitler, I think he used a different last name, but I think he kept the name Adolf, and was known as Adolf. You know, there is some interesting evidence that does suggest that Hitler may have survived beyond the war. And again, there would be no better way, in my mind, to ensure your privacy following World War II, if you were, of course, a war criminal and a you know, dictatorial, leader, who was now world renowned for his evil acts. There would be no better way to prevent capture following your escape than to fake your death and to lead people to believe that you had not survived the actual siege of Berlin there at the end of the war. So, well, at least at the end of the German involvement in the conflict. So that's, you know, something I've never ruled out. And in fact, Jim, between you and I think it's at least a likelihood that he actually did escape, like some of the other Nazis did there following the war.
Yeah, two quick things. One is I think it would have behooved in some ways the Allied powers, and I think the Russians got to Berlin before the Allies, and that's the thought. Hitler killed himself because he knew the Russians would not be kind after millions of their people were killed in the Second World War, far more than were killed of Americans, even though, of course, our country took quite a hit. Russia, I mean, my goodness, really took a hit in the Second World War, millions of people killed. But the idea, could you imagine if Hitler would have gotten loose and it would have been known? It would have been a lot of controversy, a lot of how could you let him go, much like what happened with Osama bin Laden for years. You know, the officialdom was chastised for not capturing him. It would have been much cleaner to just say, oh, he killed himself. Secondly, my memory is jogged, and I just looked it up here as well. Lavenda's theory in Ratline, the book I was talking about, is that Hitler survived beyond the bunker and moved to Indonesia, of all places. Now, if people want to check that out, certainly Peter Lavenda has his book Ratline on Amazon, or if they're a member of my Plus Club over at jimherald.net, they can check out Conspiracy Corner episode 28, and we talk to Peter at length about that particular theory. And speaking of listening to theories, I've heard of Joshua P. Warren talking about Robert the Haunted Doll, but I guess haunted dolls currently in general are a big thing these days, according to some recent news reports.
Yeah, honestly, I'd rather talk about the Hitler death conspiracy, but at least this story is somewhat interesting, you know, and you're right. Yeah, my friend and cuz, as a matter of fact, Joshua's discussed some of this stuff. He and I, by the way, you know, for years we were always fascinated with that story of Robert Eugene Otto and, of course, the haunted doll that reportedly accompanied him throughout his life, now resting in a museum, I believe, in Key West, Florida. But the Huffington Post carried an article recently talking about the popularity of these, you know, supposed haunted dolls, and the fact that apparently that a lot of these guys are attracting some interesting monetary amounts through the sale online on sites like eBay. And I think that sadly, there are probably a lot of people who are like, you know, hey, let's go find creepy dolls and sell them as haunted dolls, create, you know, supposed backstories and sell these things. You know, frankly, I think that's, you know, obviously a rather disreputable way to earn a living. But I'm sure that there are people who are out there doing that, you know, bottled ghost in a jar, haunted objects and whatnot. Now, if you have an actual genuine creepy fascination with creepy dolls, your fascination may not actually be as creepy as the creepy dolls themselves. But, you know, that's another thing. And recently, just to give you an example, this HuffPo article talks about the fact that a listing for one described as a nasty, perverse, possessed doll had attracted a final bid of $1,526, and that reported by Vice.com. So it's very interesting because there, and this is what's strange, the description here says the original eBay ad claimed that the doll gave off nasty vibes and had, get this is strange, but had been, quote, sexually abusive to the other dolls in the owner's collection.
Oh my.
The claims like this are selling points that haunted doll collectors, according to Jack Hutchcraft, who wrote this Vice.com piece I mentioned, you know, these are points that are actually attractive to the buyers of these haunted dolls. Some people, he says, want to connect solely with the spirit. Some people buy them just for the doll because they're doll collectors, and the spirited aspect of it is just a secondary thing. I thought it was baffling, really, because I can look past the ghost as long as it's a cute doll. So, you know, but it's not just dolls, Jim. I think we've talked about this in the past. You know, it's really in the broader sense. It's the you know, the fascination people have with the idea of haunted objects and the idea that an object could actually be haunted. I don't think I've owned a haunted object, but we've talked about a few in the past, and I think that I'd, yet again, expressed sincere skepticism about this, the idea that an object could be haunted by a ghost. You know, I could see personally an environment. I could also see maybe the essence. You know, there's that idea of the old, what's referred to sometimes as psychometry. You know, the idea that maybe a that the essence of a person or their character or being might exist apart from that person in relation to an object. And actually, by definition, psychometry actually is described as token object reading. It's a form of extrasensory perception purportedly that some used where they claim that they can make relevant associations from an object of unknown history by making physical contact with that object. Okay, and which it really is kind of almost the same sort of an idea as having a haunted object, that some aspect, apart from the individual who owned it, remains with that object following maybe their death and or at very least following their ownership.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, maybe we can't rule that out entirely. But again, I think the necessity for skepticism in relation to these kinds of instances is people who would literally just go out there, find or maybe even you know, fabricate a doll. They find a doll and they mess it up and make it look more old, weathered and creepy. You know, like something out of a Bride of Chucky movie, and then they sell it online, and they can make big bucks selling what is quote-unquote purportedly haunted memorabilia. Now, I don't think there's anything against the law about that, and frankly, if a person finds this as a collectible to be something that is, you know, attractive to them, you know, I think that the person who's selling it has a right to do that just as well as the person who wants to own that has a right to purchase it. I don't think that it's necessarily entirely bad, but I do worry about, you know, people flooding the market with purportedly haunted dolls that are of, at very least, what we might say, questionable origin.
Yeah. Again, you know, it comes down to ethics. You know, if somebody's selling something they believe is haunted and touting it as haunted, I find that... If they truly believe it, I find that a little less troublesome than somebody selling something they're just ginning up as haunted. But still, I don't know. I mean, I don't. I'm probably a little less skeptical than you are, though. Probably skeptical about maybe a little less than you are about the idea that objects can be haunted. I still have the thought that might be possible. I don't know that I'm convinced. But again, selling them seems a little. I don't know. It seems a little like a lot of profiteering to me. So I guess we'll have to watch out. But all I can say is that if there were haunted dolls or even ones that look slightly haunted, I want nothing to do with them. Micah, you can have my share.
Ah, well, thanks. I appreciate that. That's why we're good friends, Jim. We're good friends. Good friends. Good enough that we, from time to time, hop over to each other's websites and see what we're doing. Yes, I know. I've got to give you a shameless plug. What's happening over there at jimherald.com this week,
oh,
sir?
Oh, yes. Well, it's been a fun week over at jimherald.com. We have a new campfire out. We took a couple of weeks off. We're dealing with some family health issues, but everything's thankfully worked out. A new campfire featuring a story from the UK involving a mysterious... Get this, Micah, a spoon. In one of the weirdest campfire stories I've ever heard, frankly... It's so weird that I was wondering if I was being put on, but it is really, really, really weird. And then also we have Never Argue with a Dead Person over at jimherald.com. That's an interview with psychic Thomas John. Then over at jimherald.net, Stan Gordon, UFO researcher, talking about the Bigfoot UFO connection. I know that's one that Michael will listen to. And then, an interview with a woman who uses a deck, but not a tarot deck. She uses something called the Lenormand Oracle, which I've never heard of, but interesting on our other side podcast. So it's been a very interesting week. Part two of our Bigfoot 101 webinar we did, which will be archived in video soon, maybe even by the time you hear this. So very, very busy times around these parts. And I know there's always something big going on over at Graylian Report. So tell us what's going on over at graylianreport.com.
That's right. The denizens of the Hollow Earth right now are running routine maintenance on the computers within the bunker while I am traveling abroad. I am deep in the heart of the Lone Star State right now, broadcasting, in fact, right this moment from Skeleton Studios outside Weatherford, Texas, which is, of course, the lair and headquarters of Expanded Perspectives. Have you know these guys, right?
Yeah, I know who they are. They do a fine job.
They do a very good job, and their studio I'm in right now actually has so much character. They've got a lot of wonderful equipment, and a couple of guys who've really risen, I think, in my personal opinion, within this genre of podcast, they've risen to prominence for putting effort into learning to do what they do extremely well, and I think they do a great job. And I do, you know, of course, ask people to check out their site, expandedperspectives.com, check out their podcast on iTunes. If you like the Graylian Report, or if you like Jim Harold's Paranormal Podcast, or if you like the Paranormal Report, it's that same line of stuff with a little more of a bent on ancient mysteries and things like that. So you'll really enjoy Expanded Perspectives. But I got to tell you, this week on the Graylian Report, we thought, man, you know what would be really cool is, since I'm going to be down there, we did the Graylian Report live from the studios.
Cool.
And I had the guys sit in with me on the program since my co-hosts were conveniently absent on that evening. Yes. And so it all worked out for the better anyway. And then for the subscriber content, you see, Expanded Perspectives, they've got their own subscriber area just like what we're doing. And so we said, you know what, we're going to combine our efforts here, kind of like what Jim and I do for you guys every week. And so our subscriber shows are what we called it, it was a trifecta of terror in which Cam and Kyle and I put our heads together and we recounted some of our adventures for the last few days here in Texas. We have been to, Jim, the Aurora Cemetery, where, again, in 1897, it was purported that an airship crashed in that town and that
the cot
was supposedly buried there. Yeah, I went there, and we filmed some video. We spent some time, as I already mentioned, at Lake Worth, just outside Fort Worth, with Lyle Blackburn, author of The Beast of Boggy Creek. It has been an incredible time down here. And so that's all stuff that you'll find over at GraylianReport.com. And, of course, you'll always find this show there just as well as over at Jim Harold's site as well. And I tell you, it's been another great time, man, catching up with you. This is one of my favorite podcasts because, you know, part of it's looking into the stuff we love. The other part's getting to chum around with my good pal Jim.
Yeah, it's always fun. We usually talk a half hour to hour before we start. So we catch up on everything and then we do the show. We kind of warm up our vocal cords. And you can check both of us out on social media, our websites. You can also sign up for our videos. People keep saying, well, you're not doing video anymore. Yes, we are. Go over to jimherald.com/TPR sign up and we may just feature your video. And of course, subscribe to this show on iTunes, your podcasts app, or any of your other. You can hear my dogs barking in the background. They're agreeing. And also Android, whatever it might be that you use, your podcatching software, subscribe to us because that does two things. One, you never miss an audio episode. You always get all of them. And the other thing, it also helps us out a little bit too. So I would be very appreciative if you would do that. And we thank you ever so much for tuning in to this edition of the Paranormal Report.
You've got several lights flashing all around it, and underneath, and no ghosts are real.
You've been talking about Sasquatches and Yetis.
Yellow, orange objects straight ahead.
This is the Paranormal Report.